What's up, everybody? This week on the 90s podcast, I'm joined by Sarah as we sit down to talk about the 1995 Academy Award winning best movie, Forrest Gump. That and a lot more is to come on this week's edition of the 90s podcast. Welcome to the show. Everybody, what's going on, and welcome back to the 90s podcast right here in the Because of the Network. Hope you're doing well today, and we're starting a brand new season of the greatest podcast that ever existed. Let's face it.
That's right.
You know, I mean, what else are you going to listen to? Joe Rogan, where you talk a bunch of crap? Nah. No, I'm just kidding. Everybody, hope everybody's doing well today. It has been a wonderful, wonderful last couple of months. So, yeah, we're starting the season late this year, so I apologize. We usually started the first week of the year, but circumstance got in the way, and so we're starting at mid-March.
Yep.
Or early March. I can't remember the exact date of it. I think it's the first Sunday in March. Anyway, hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm joined by Sarah, by the way, if you can't tell. And today, we're going to be talking about the 1995 Academy Award winner for Best Picture that absolutely and utterly did not deserve it. And we'll get into... this is going to be a doozy, everybody. This is going to be a doozy. Before we go ahead and get started, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us over the last couple of years. And we really do appreciate it, as we are in season 10 of what we do.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So we've been doing this now for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is our 10th season.
So, wow.
I know, right? It's surreal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're probably asking yourself, where can I find you guys online? You can go to becausewenetwork.com. That's where we've got all of our archive of every single show we've ever done ever. Every audio show, every video show. So, for example, if you wanted to watch Season 5, Episode 12 of The 90s Gamer, you can go to the website. You don't have to search our YouTube channel. It's right there, okay? And it'll take you directly to where you need to go.
That's right.
Also, you can check us out on social media.
Mm-hmm.
On Facebook and Instagram.
Yes.
Because Maybe Network. Yes. We still post, but we're not active on the Twitter anymore, which is a shame. But
by the time this is released, I'm not even sure Twitter's going to be a thing.
No, I don't think so either. But
or still, X.
No, it's Twitter.
Well, X.
I'm calling it Twitter.
And in a lot of Asian languages, X is pronounced sh, so it makes it sh-er. Sorry.
And we're back, everybody. and if you've somehow come across this and you want to listen to more what we do, judging by, you know, your likelihood of listening on.
I mean, we're awesome.
We're awesome. We're on a lot of places. Where are we? I'm glad you asked. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't catch us there, look up YouTube. We're always on YouTube with everything that we do. YouTube is our archive, so...
Yes.
YouTube is our physical archive. The website is where you go to find the stuff, obviously. Mm-hmm. Obviously. So I'm just rambling away. Sarah, how have you been the last year?
I'm well. I'm here. It's hey.
Hey, indeed.
Yes.
I'm sounding a little down because since I last spoke to you, I turned 40. And I feel old now. Like, I actually feel old.
Stares at you and 3 years older.
Yeah, but you're young at heart.
For real?
You're younger than I am.
Is this y'all?
You always radiate younger than
really?
I am. I look like I'm 50.
No, you don't.
You still look like you're in your 20s.
You are very sweet, but I'm going to cut you. I'm not really going to cut him. We do not advocate domestic or any other kind of violence here.
No. But it's just, we're just getting this stuff out of the way. Joking aside and everything, that is really, really good to be back after what's been a real, real doozy of a year 2022 was for us.
Mm.
Yeah, so just a lot of things went on, and I don't feel like season 9 was some of our best work, even though it was some of our best work, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping to make up for it with season 10 and do some of our best work ever.
Hey. Ever. Didn't you mean 2023?
Did I say 2022?
You did.
I meant 2023.
Y'all, I'm so confused.
It's okay. I'm tired, everybody. Now we're knee-deep in 2024, and it hasn't gone so bad this year, hopefully.
Yeah, not at all. It's been perfect.
We don't know yet. It's yeah, we haven't hit 2024 yet by the time we're recording this, but it's not going to be out until later on because I've got a lot of work to do on this stuff.
Yes.
I'm not allowed to release anything until I have all episodes.
Correct.
Done.
And if you've been a listener long enough, you understand why. It is a very one of the few wifely decrees that I have slapped down here. Well, so.
And she is the boss.
On occasion.
Oh, you were the boss of our parent company.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
All right, so we're here today to talk about 1994's classic Americana, Life is Like a Box of Chocolates, Forrest Gump.
Yes.
What do you think of Forrest Gump, sir?
Well, I mean, I am a lover of random obscure pop culture references.
Okay.
So this movie just sort of ticked off all those boxes.
Okay, cool.
So, and I'm also a lover of quotable things.
Yeah.
And this movie has a lot of that.
I used to like this movie.
And
then I did. Then I watched it again with a critical eye. Because, you know, to do these things, you got to watch stuff over again. I did my research, and I watched the movie, and my research kind of tallied up with the movie, as opposed to the movie tallying up with the research. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I watched it again, and yeah, I kind of, my opinion has turned.
Oh no!
On this movie.
Oh no!
Oh yeah.
Well, let's talk about him.
We're in for a doozy. Well, what is Forrest Gump? Well, it's a comedy, drama, and historical movie. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. There are some heartfelt, funny moments. It was
Dramedy,
yes. It was directed by Robert Zemeckis. Mm-hmm. If you don't know who that is, go check out Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. Who framed Roger Rabbit, Beowulf.
Yes.
You know, anything Tom Hanks did in the late 90s, early 2000s, it's got his fingerprints on it. It was written by Eric Roth. Mm-hmm. Eric Roth has done a lot of movies, if you're unfamiliar with his work. He wrote Forrest Gump, obviously. But he wrote Ali. He wrote Munich.
Oh, okay.
Star is Born.
Which one?
Bradley Cooper version.
Okay.
That's pretty much. I mean, like he did The Horse Whisperer, The Postman, Mr. Yeah. Jones.
Yeah.
You know, just a whole bunch of those kind of movies. It's produced by the Tisch Company.
Yeah.
And distributed by Paramount Pictures. It was released on the 6th of the 6th, 1994. Mm-hmm. So no matter which side of the world you write the date, it's correct.
Yeah.
And it did a box office of $678 million.
But that's in mid-90s money.
Mid-90s money.
So that would be...
Billions today.
Yeah. Like, it'd be up there. It'd be in Barbie land.
Oh, yeah.
Money-wise. And to be perfectly honest, I guarantee you that its soundtrack did about that.
Oh, yeah.
That soundtrack was everywhere.
And you know, I don't have notes on the soundtrack, which we'll pull out of our behind later on in the episode when I go to the internet and read it off. How did it come about, right? Because Forrest Gump was a book written by Winston Groom.
Mm-hmm.
And the... You know how... Okay. When you're on a publishing contract, you write like a treatment for a book,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, that treatment ended up in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and before the book was even finished, there was a bidding war going on, which was won by Warner Brothers.
Hey!
However,
uh-huh.
that was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And what famous movie came out in the 80s that had a savant character in it?
That would be Rain Man.
That'd be Rain Man.
Yes.
So Rain Man came out and was absolutely successful, and basically Warner had nothing to do with, they didn't want to do it anymore.
They would have typecast themselves.
Yes.
Yes.
So the movie rights were passed around until Paramount traded the rights to it.
Okay.
And then it got an Eric Roth rewrite.
Okay.
And focuses the movie on the first 11 chapters and the final two chapters of Forrest's life. So his childhood, him going to war, basically everything you see in the movie. It leaves a chunk out.
Right.
But that chunk, I think, would have been Forrest Gump 2. We'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it seemed right at the time to do a movie like this.
Well, you also have to understand that there were things that were acceptable then that you is not acceptable now.
No.
There's language for things then that now would be
you can't get away with.
No. And it's not that they were trying to do bad. It's just, you know, you don't know how bad you're being until you evolve. And correct. This has a lot of that. I think there's a good chunk of it that did not age well.
No. A lot of this movie didn't age well, and we'll get to why it didn't age well later on here in a minute.
Right.
So let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Travolta could have pulled this off?
No. Not Travolta of that era, because that was...
Comeback Travolta.
Yeah, well, no, that not quite. That was in Look Who's Talking era Travolta.
Pulp Fiction.
No, but Travolta. It was before Travolta. It was before Pulp Fiction.
It was, well...
It was between Look Who's Talking and Pulp Fiction. Yeah, so, but mentally, I still pick... No. Mm-mm.
No.
Because if they passed that around, if it was filmed in 94, he would have looked at that in like 91. That was Look Who's Talking Travolta.
Yeah, I guess.
And no, that would not have.
I guess. And he says that person on this role is his biggest regret. So he was number one. He was dialed in to be Forrest Gump, which, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
I can't even think of Travolta trying to say life is like a box of chocolates. Jesus. No.
what about Bill Murray? Too old?
No, not then, but...
He's
too smarmy.
Yeah. It'd be the antithesis of what Forrest...
Well, the whole thing is that Forrest was humble because he didn't realize... what he was doing. Like, he was completely oblivious to his impact or how his actions, you know, whatever. And Bill has too much, we'll just say swagger, I guess you could say. He's got too much.
He's too much charisma.
Je ne sais quoi. to ever wallflower anything.
Well, then again, this is coming off of Groundhog Day, Bill Murray.
Again. No.
Okay. What about Chevy Chase?
Same.
I think. Well, not only that, his heyday was in the late 80s, so he would have cooled off a lot by then.
Still, no. Chevy's... The only... To be perfectly honest, and I know that the names that you're throwing out are names that were...
Discussed.
Is there another one? Before I say what I'm going to say, let's wrap up this.
Sean Penn.
That I can see, because he did that movie, he did a movie where he plays a man who has a mental disability who's raising, is it My Name is Sam?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think so.
But anyway, yes, Sean Penn could do it. Sean Penn can play... Okay, does Sean Penn have an ego? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Is he able to set that aside and act through it? Also, yes. So,
yeah.
Sean Penn, yes. But going back to the other thing as far as Murray and Chevy Chase, the only actor from that, like, I might as well say old school SNL, would either be Martin Short or Dan Aykroyd.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Dan Aykroyd, because another actor of similar stature was who Winston Groom pictured as Forrest Gump, and that was John Goodman.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
I mean, let's look at, I've forgotten his name now, Angelina Jolie's ex-husband.
Yeah, Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob Thornton. He played in
Sling Blade.
Sling Blade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah. So John Goodman could have done that because there's similar acting styles and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
He had the comedy timing and the acting timing to do that. But then again, he was just coming off the Flintstones.
Yeah.
He was
too, and plus he was on Roseanne at the time too. He was a busy boy.
He was busy, busy. But yeah, that's
Aykroyd could have done it.
Yeah, I think so. But I think Aykroyd was too old For the age of the character that they wanted him to
maybe,
play.
Maybe, yeah.
Because like Forrest Gump, because Tom Hanks was youthful looking back then.
Mm-hmm.
And you could age him up and not have a problem.
Yeah.
But he looked like playing 19-year-old Forrest, he looked like a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd was balding at that point. I mean, he...
And now, while I will say...
And Cornhead was a better movie.
Yeah, right? Forrest Gump was the first time that I have ever really... Like, you've watched something with special effects before, but that was, like, one of the first really, wow, how did they do that?
Yeah.
That I remember, you know, like, because there was no AI then.
No. I mean, this is the same production company that did Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Right, but even then, I mean, there was effects there, but that wasn't, like... The way that they manipulated stock footage and stuff in this movie is insane for the time.
Oh, yeah. Because CGI wasn't that good. I mean, that's why they used miniatures and puppets for Jurassic Park, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Other people who were going to be in this film, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, they were going to have Joe Pesci as Lieutenant Dan.
No. Mm-mm. But that was like, Gary Sinise inadvertently made Lieutenant Dan like part of his entire personality.
True.
Like after that movie, well, he did a lot of work because in order to learn that job, he did a lot of work,
military.
He spent a lot of time with like veterans and like the VA and whatnot, like talking to Vietnam vets.
Yeah.
And that helped spark his, like...
Lifelong crusade.
Yes. So...
Well, there was... also, all right, what about this then? Bubba. Chappelle. Chappelle was trying to do serious acting at that point.
Okay. But, I can see it.
You know. But then again, he did Robin Hood Men in Tights before this and Con Air after this.
Mm-hmm. So are you listing people who they were actually in talks with that they wanted to do it or people that they wanted but necessarily said no?
These are people who, according to my research, according to... Because I looked up IMDb, I looked up Wikipedia, I looked up the source of Wikipedia.
Right.
Chappelle, David Alan Grier, Cube, and Tupac. Yeah. You're laughing. Go on. What's the joke? What am I missing?
I can't see. I cannot. Was Tupac a good actor? Absolutely.
Oh yeah, I can't see him doing this.
I can't.
Shrimp stew, shrimp salad. No.
And then just Jada off on the side of the set. Just I can't. I can't. Okay. Sorry.
But I mean that was the nicety of it. You know, they got the production well and truly started. They got the right cast in, and then they tried to renege on a promise to Winston Groom, who was supposed to get something like 2% of the gross. So 2% of the profit, excuse me. So it made $623 million. So 1% of that is $6 million. $12 million. $13 million.
Okay.
Give or take a few dollars between $12 and $13 million. Well, they tried to rip him off and say that the movie never made a profit.
Okay. I mean, they spent a lot of money on that on the effects, but still, no.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Well, instead they settled out of court for a 7-figure sum, so that could be anything between $1 and $9.9 million. So we'll never know, but it was done. So we talked about who could have been in this movie, who was in this movie. Tom Hanks. We mentioned his youthful... Was he an actor on the rise at that point, or was he already there? I can't remember. Because he did big...
He was already there. He did a lot of... Yeah. Because, I mean, he did... Especially here in the States. He was... Because he did TV before he did movies. So he was in like... I mean, I grew up watching Bosom Buddies. So... But then you had Big and a lot of other... Yeah.
What was the movie where... I don't know if this was before this movie or after this movie, where he played an AIDS patient.
Philadelphia.
That's
that was after this movie.
Okay. Because I don't know if it was before or not.
Mm-mm.
I don't know which one triggered each other. Michael Conor Humphreys played a young Forrest Gump. He is actually now an Army veteran, according to Tom Hanks.
Oh, I remember seeing that clip. Yeah. Because he was talking about it on Graham Norton.
Graham Norton, yeah. You had Robin Wright, Robin Wright Penn, as she was known.
That would have been weird. They weren't together then, were they?
I don't know. It's listed as Robin Wright to you.
Oh, no, they're not together now.
No, I know, but what I mean is, okay.
No, I know they weren't married then.
Oh, if they were together then.
I don't know if they were together then or not. That would have been weird. Huh.
Call me Jenny. then you had
I'm going to sprinkle him with holy water, y'all.
Then you're going to have Gary Sinise playing Lieutenant Dan. Was that a good acting? Was that a good choice? I think so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then you've got... okay, I can never pronounce this name, so you're going to have to help me out with this
one. Mykettie Williamson.
Mykettie Williamson playing Bubba Blue. Mm-hmm. I didn't know Sally Field played Mrs. Gump.
You didn't know that?
No, they make up to very, very well.
Sally Field is a national treasure. I love that woman. She is just... she is so adorable, and she is so sweet. And, like...
Except the character they made her play, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Well, yeah, no, but I'm talking about, like, in real life. Oh, yeah. She is just so sweet. Like, there's that, The ice skater Olympic dude. I forget his name. He is just as fabulous as can be. I cannot think of his name. But she was, like, wholesomely trying... Because, you know, most people... there's a lot of people her age, her generation, that if they have children that as our kids say, because we have kids that fall on it in the alphabet mafia, right?
Yeah.
So that, you know, in the LGBTQ community, there are a lot of people in her age that balk at that. Not Miss Sally. She is an icon. She was like hitting up the ice skater. I cannot think of his name, but he is just he's the cutest thing. But she was like, you know, commenting on his Instagram. She's like, my son is single. And I love that. I absolutely love that.
You had Haley Joel Osment as Forrest Gump Jr. Yeah, it's weird to believe that he went from Forrest Gump to playing a podcast host in a Walrus movie.
Right?
And you had Peter Dobson and Kurt Russell.
I forget. Playing Elvis Presley. I forgot that Kurt Russell played old Elvis. So
that's who was in it.
And also, you've got the cameo and archival footage, which is really cool because, you know, those special effects that we were talking about was like Dick Cavett and John Lennon and JFK and Lyndon Johnson. So,
all you need is love.
Right. I remember sitting and watching that movie. And then later on, like a couple of years later, VH1 had acquired the rights of all the old Dick Cavett shows. And they used to play them constantly. And I remember watching that episode with John Lennon and just trying to figure out how they cut it to get Forrest Gump in it.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, sorry.
Well, no, it's a masterpiece of cinema, this movie is. It is. The way it pushed boundaries for its time, for the type of movie that it was. I mean, it wasn't an action movie, but it had all these special effects in there. It had a story, which we'll get to. Oh, we're going to get to it. And, you know, this is the difference between a film and a piece of cinema.
Right.
So this was designed for the Kevin Smiths out there and Tarantinos and the Robert Rodriguez's, you know?
Right.
This was designed to be a movie person's movie.
Right.
So.
Well, now this, the plot is somewhat lengthy. And so as not to bore you, we're going to alternate. So, I'll go first.
Okay, and I will interject when I have an opinion.
Well, crap, we'll never get done. No, kidding. I love my husband. He has opinions with it. Oh, that's okay, so do I. So, starting off with, in 1981, a man named Forrest Gump recounts his life story to strangers who happen to sit next to him at a bus stop. As a boy in 1956, Forrest has an IQ of 75 and is fitted with leg braces to correct a curved spine. He lives in Greenbow, Alabama, with his mother, who runs a boarding house and encourages him to live beyond his disabilities. That is Sally Field, yes.
That's an honorable goal.
Yes. Among their temporary tenants is a young Elvis Presley, who plays the guitar for Forrest and incorporates the boys' jerky dance movements into his live performances. On his first day of school, Forrest meets a pretty girl named Jenny Curran, and the two become best friends.
After she asks him, are you stupid or something?
Kids are kids. Yeah.
This is the first shot in the Jenny character assassination that this movie becomes.
Mm-hmm. They're like peas and carrots. Jenny is a victim of child sexual abuse at the hands of her widowed alcoholic father, but she is later removed from his custody.
So, nice happy beginnings for Forrest there. Mm-hmm. His best friend is not happy with her life.
Well, it was the time.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't excuse it. But Forrest is bullied because of his leg braces and his dim-wittedness.
Mm-hmm.
One day he flees from a group of children and his braces break off. He's revealed to be a fast runner.
Ooh.
With this talent, he receives a football scholarship at the University of Alabama in 1962, where he's coached by the infamous Bear Bryant to become a top kick returner and is named in the All-American team, meets President JFK at the White House. So that was the first kind of clip that you saw of Forrest being inserted into mm-hmm. archival footage.
Yeah, right.
And, excuse me. In his first year of college, he witnesses Governor George Wallace stand in the schoolhouse door and returns a dropped book to Vivian Malone Jones, one of the girls admitted over state resistance. He visits Jenny at college, and the two have an awkward encounter. Now, there's a bit of a narrative jump there, but this is part of the reason I don't like the movie after reviewing it a second time or a third time.
Mm-hmm.
They put a lot of Alabamian current events in this movie. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was the height of the civil rights movement,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the archival footage that they used mm-hmm. was not appropriate.
Okay,
they cut a scene out where the police were going to set the dogs onto a bunch of protesters, and Forrest calms the dogs down by calling them good boys and whatnot. So it's not racially sensitive. It's very racially insensitive.
Mm. Okay. I'm following.
So it's like it's saying that, you know, Forrest is the hero.
Well, yeah, there is a lot of...
And he's
inadvertent idiot savant white saviorism in this. Yes,
and he's oblivious to what he's doing.
Well, that's the whole thing, though. That the whole point of it is that he leads this extraordinary life, but he's oblivious to all of it.
But is he? We'll get to that here in a minute.
Well.
No, we will get to that because there is a point in the movie where the obliviousness is, I don't want to say it's an act, but the obliviousness mask slips.
Mm. Okay.
And we'll get to that.
Well, after graduating from college in 66, Forrest enlists in the U.S. Army. During basic training, he befriends a fellow soldier named Benjamin Buford Blue, nicknamed Bubba, who convinces Forrest to go into the shrimping business with him after their service. While on leave, Forrest goes to Memphis, Tennessee to see Jenny, who is expelled from college for posing for Playboy in her college sweater, and now works as a singer in a strip club. However, he embarrasses her by attacking some patrons who were harassing her, causing the two to part on bad terms. Soon after, Forrest and Bubba are sent to fight in Vietnam, serving with the 9th Infantry Division in the Mekong Delta region under Lieutenant Dan Taylor. After months of routine operations, their platoon is ambushed while on patrol, and several members of the platoon are killed in action, including Bubba. Forrest saves several others, including Lieutenant Dan, who loses both of his lower legs, while Forrest is shot in the buttocks. While recovering from his wound, Forrest develops a talent for ping pong. Taylor is embittered to have been saved, as he would rather have died in combat, like his ancestors, and is returned home. Forrest is awarded the Medal of Honor for his heroism by President Lyndon B. Johnson, and so then shows him where
he was wounded.
Yes.
Well, see, that's it. That's the thing, right? At the beginning of the movie, Lieutenant Dan is a bit of a jerk. He's a macho kind of jock army guy, you know, who...
Well, I mean, that's what was there at the time.
I'm going to survive this war. I'm going to die in battle like my family. Mm-hmm. And... Okay. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Forrest didn't know that. That's the obliviousness coming into it.
Okay.
But, I mean, I don't know. The Vietnam thing has always kind of bothered me. The whole point of the war. The whole point of the West entering the war, I should say.
Oh, well, that's a whole nother...
That's a whole different thing. I understand that.
Yeah, no, we're not debating all that here.
No, we're not. But just see Star Wars if you want a good story about the Vietnam War.
Right.
So an anti-war march on the Pentagon rally, Forrest meets Abby Hoffman and encounters a Black Panther group and reunites with Jenny, who has become a drug-addled hippie and anti-war activist. But the two assume Perth again as she departs for San Francisco with her abusive boyfriend, president of the SDS at Berkeley. Forrest plays ping pong in the special services, competing against Chinese teams in ping pong diplomacy, becoming a celebrity. Earned himself an interview alongside John Lennon on the Dick Cavett Show. Mm-hmm. He appears to influence Lennon's song Imagine. Forrest spends 1972 New Year's Eve in New York City with Lieutenant Dan, who has become an alcoholic and is still bitter about his disability and the government's apathy towards Vietnam veterans.
Which was, yeah, that's how it was.
That's how it was. Forrest does not enjoy the company of Lieutenant Dan's prostitutes, but because of his devotion to Jenny, and rejects their advances, leading Lieutenant Dan to throw them out, insulting Forrest. Forrest's ping-pong success eventually leads him to meet him with President Richard Nixon. He's given a room at the Watergate complex, where he unwittingly exposes a plot.
That part amused me.
Okay, that is amusing. And he still holds the candle for Jenny.
Oh, well, yeah.
Which...
I mean, okay, yeah, but that's not outside of the human condition.
No, it's a little creepy, but I get what you're saying.
No, it's not. No, okay, let's stop. In my opinion, and let me break this down.
Your humble opinion.
Okay, here's the thing. Forrest, obviously, as we know now, is on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jenny is a constant in his life.
True.
Jenny, good or bad, has always been there to tell him what she thinks, how she, whatever. But, you know, I mean, just she has inadvertently, without asking to be, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Without asking for his affection, he sort of made her into his paragon of virtue, even though she is very much not virtuous. But that's how he's fixed her in his mind. And that's not an uncommon thing, even for people who are off the spectrum. Think of how many times we build up people that don't. The human psyche can look past a lot of faults in other people. Yeah. So, I mean, she's safe. She's, you know, she's home. She's safe. And so that, to me, that makes sense.
Okay.
So,
well,
but no, you're good. You're good. You so are. Continuing on, in 1974, Forrest is honorably discharged from the army and returns to Greenbow, where he endorses a company that makes ping pong paddles. He uses the earnings to buy a shrimping boat in Bayou Labatra?
I don't know. That's a Louisiana place name.
Yeah. Fulfilling his promise to Bubba. Lieutenant Dan joins Forrest, and they initially have little success. After their boat becomes the only one to survive Hurricane Carmen, they pull in huge amounts of shrimp and create the profitable Bubblegum Shrimp Company. Lieutenant Dan finally thanks Forrest for saving his life. Dan invests his money in early tech companies on the stock market, which Forrest mistakes for some kind of fruit company.
Apple.
And the two become millionaires. Forrest gives half of his earnings to Bubba's family for having inspired the shrimping venture. Forrest returns home to his mother and cares for her during her terminal illness from cancer. After she dies, Forrest spends most of his time volunteering as a gardener at the University of Alabama.
Now, what the plot didn't say was that, yes, they were the only boat to survive Hurricane Carmen because they were out in the middle of the Gulf at the time when it hit. And in fact, it even hit them.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Lieutenant Dan had his
come to Jesus meeting.
Yes. So, back in 1976,
mm-hmm.
Jenny is now clean, recovering from years of drugs and abuse, and returns to Forrest. Mm-hmm. One day, the two are walking close to the home and discover the now abandoned house of Jenny's father, where Jenny in a rage throws all the rocks she can find at it until she collapses in anguish, mm-hmm. kind of exercising some demons. That night, she tells Forrest that I missed the line. After some time, Forrest proposes to her, but she turns him down, much to Forrest's dismay. The night she tells Forrest she does love him and they have sex, and she leaves the next morning. Heartbroken, Forrest goes running for no particular reason and embarks on a relentless cross-country marathon, becoming famous for another feat. Unwittingly gives in... Sorry, Forrest lets a gun of many followers, some of whom are struggling businessmen who he gives inspiration to. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Just do it in the smiley face, right?
Yes. Yeah. After a total of about 3 years and 2.5 months running, Forrest decides to end the run and returns to Greenbow, much to the surprise of his followers. Now,
I love that part of the movie. He's just like, okay, I'm good. And they're like, what mysticism? What can you tell us? I'm heading home. I'm good.
Did he sleep?
Yeah.
So you just like took off running, slept at...
That's what he said. Running. He said, when I'm hungry, you know, when I was hungry, I ate, I was tired, I slept.
Okay.
And then I ran. So...
Because that bit always bothered me. It's like he stayed awake for 3 years running.
No. All right. In 81, Forrest gets a letter from Jenny asking to visit him, and it turns out that's why he's been waiting at the bus stop. An old lady informs him that the address is only 5 or 6 blocks away, and Forrest rushes off. Forrest again reunites with Jenny, who introduces him to her young son, Forrest Gump Jr., and reveals that Forrest is his father.
Now, this is where the facade... See, because, okay, everything we've spoken about, he's been telling stories at the bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
And been reimagining his life.
Mm-hmm.
This part is present time. So there's no CGI, there's no
right.
story... He flat out asks her, is he like me?
Well, yeah, because he knows he has some sort of mental... Yeah. He knows he's different from everybody.
Right, but it's the obliviousness of everything else. And
oh, no.
And he's not oblivious that he has a low IQ.
Well, no. I mean, he says the whole thing. I'm not a smart man. I mean, he says it repeatedly. So, I mean, it didn't drop.
I think it did. I think up until this point, everything is an embellishment. Does that make sense?
So you, it's basically all like parables.
Parables.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. The moment that he stopped living in the past, he's talking about the future, is where he faces up to a lot of what he is.
Mm.
There's no obliviousness. There's no hiding behind anything that he stumbled across Watergate,
mm-hmm.
that he... survived a hurricane,
mm-hmm.
that he was this champion ping pong player who never took his eye off the ball, never blinked when they played. This is the raw, real moment.
Okay. Forrest is initially shocked at the revelation, but starts to bond with his son. Jenny later tells Forrest she is sick with some kind of virus, and the doctors can't do anything for her. The three move back to Greenbow, and Jenny and Forrest finally marry. Among their wedding guests is Lieutenant Dan, who's now walking on titanium alloy prosthetics with his fiance, a Vietnamese woman named Susan. And Jenny succumbs to her illness a year later. Forrest is devastated by her death, but becomes a loving, devoted father to Forrest Jr. as the two engage in activities like ping pong and fishing. Forrest also buys the land that had belonged to Jenny's father and has the house demolished. Lastly, Forrest sees his son off on his first day of school.
With the same bus driver.
Yes, that I cried. So
with the same bus driver. No, that's the movie, right? And one of the constants in this movie, and I'm gonna just flat out say it right now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the constants in this movie is the portrayal of Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Forrest is this clean cut, kind of had advantage taken off him by the army. By the football, mm-hmm. by the people he was running mm-hmm. with. And Jenny comes across as this...
Oh, it's the Madonna of horror.
Yeah.
Dichotomy.
The Horror Babylon.
Yeah.
Basically. She is to blame for all of the faults that are going on in her life, she is to blame. Now, is there parts where she needs to take responsibility for her actions? Of course. But quite clearly... That is a child that needs therapy.
Yeah, but they didn't. You can't look at something set in the 60s with a 2023 lens.
No,
though,
but at a 19...
they didn't have that.
But a 1994 lens is still making her out to be the villain.
Well, no, they were portraying it how it would have been. You can still be true. It's still true to the time.
True. But at the same time, she was blamed for a lot of her actions. I just, watching it...
This is one of the few times that we are going to have to severely agree to disagree on something.
Okay. I think that the way that she was portrayed was poor.
No, okay. Was she portrayed badly in some areas? Yes. I think a lot of it is situational, and I think a lot of it is meant to be portrayed as situational. I think because it shows that she cares for Forrest. She cares for Forrest
as much as she can care for someone.
As much as she is capable at any given point of time in the movie of caring for anybody.
Yes.
So, she's trying to survive in a world where women had zero to any rights at the time. I mean, at the time when she did her Playboy spread and left school, women couldn't have a credit card.
No, I know all that.
I mean, so
it was just displayed as this, see this woman, stay away from her because she's bad. She's evil. Mm. Well, okay. She wasn't.
No, I didn't see her portrayed quite that bad. I mean, I thought it was more real, but I didn't think, and it showed what she went through, but I don't think it was necessarily a reflection on her.
Right.
But maybe I'm viewing it through an empathetic female lens, so maybe not.
Because the way I saw it was, is that everything wrong in Forrest's life was Jenny's fault.
No.
That's how it came across. Like, every time she'd go away and he'd hit a depressive thing, oh, that just left him. You know what I mean? Or she's in and out of his life again. You know, it's...
Well, yeah, because she didn't know.
She didn't know, but the film's attitude towards that kind
right.
of was entirely yeah. negative.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's where a lot of this movie falls off for me. Is the portrayal of Jenny.
Right.
It's, you know, she went through a hard life as a child, was never helped for it, and was turned into this person of disrepute.
Right.
So not necessarily, you know, she should have gotten help and they should have given her help because obviously they didn't.
Right, that wasn't a thing.
That wasn't a thing back then, but at the same time, the way they portrayed... She wasn't portrayed as sympathetic as she should have been.
Okay. I'll give you that one.
So, one of the things... We're going to talk about three things that this movie, right? Three things this movie kind of... Was at the... At the core of this movie.
Right, aside from Forrest, the core themes, yeah.
Aside from Forrest and Janie's love. But love does play a big part.
Yes.
You know, Forrest, as we mentioned, had unconditional love for Jenny. No matter how many times he was rebuked. Right,
peas and carrots, yes.
Peas and carrots. He still loves her.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they do, at the end of the day, they do spend the rest of Jenny's life together.
Yes.
Now, what I found out during the research, she died of Hep C.
Okay.
Not AIDS, is what people have...
Yeah, the timing's not right for AIDS.
Timing's not right for AIDS.
No, because AIDS...
was a couple of years later.
Yeah, like...
was the mid-80s. This was the early 80s.
No, I mean, she would have caught it around 82, 83, and she would already had it in 81, so that would have been Hep C.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even then, now that's something you can live with, but then it was
then,
not. No.
Couldn't know. I mean, Forrest loves everybody and everybody who he's close with. He treats them with unconditional love and respect.
Well, again, it's also, I don't want to generalize here.
No.
A fair amount of people, and I say this as someone who has family in various positions on the spectrum, there's at some point with spectrum folks, and this is a generalization without trying to generalize. Obviously, every individual is different.
In your experience.
In my non-professional, personal experience, a lot of people on certain parts of the spectrum, they're great with you until you give them a reason not to be.
Yes.
They have no inner voice that says, be cautious around other people. That's why others, depending on where someone's at on the spectrum, it's very easy for them to be taken advantage of because they trust wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
They trust until they are repeatedly shown, no. So, until somebody really shows them who they are.
Yeah.
So, and Forrest does that. He trusts and he loves his people hard.
Yeah.
For in good and bad. And happy and sad.
Well, that and his bonds with Bubba and Lieutenant Dan are more manly bonds, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because Forrest, whether you see it or not, Forrest is a manly man when you think about it, right? No, okay. The way like a 6-foot, 120-pound soaking wet man can be, he's a manly man. He's a former veteran.
Right.
He's a fisherman.
Yeah.
He's an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, he's a jock, serviceman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's all of that right. rolled into one.
Right.
And
I got you. That makes sense.
So his bond with other men is based on their shared.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only thing he didn't have was friends on the football team that they didn't show. They showed his friends in the military. They showed his friends in shrimping and so on and so forth. But they didn't show friends mm-hmm. in the military. Not military, in the football.
Mm. Okay.
Even the water boy had friends in football.
Yeah.
But this movie also deals with tragedy, too. The deaths of Bubba and Mrs. Gump really, really take their toll on Forrest.
Oh, yeah.
Lieutenant Dan also suffers with the loss of his legs and blames Forrest for not letting him die honorably.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I've never understood that mentality of, you know, let me die.
I mean, just because you don't understand me.
It's not a criticism. It's something right. I don't understand. You know, I've never understood. And I mean, and then you got Jenny's involvement in the peace movement objecting to the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. Because Vietnam does take a huge chunk of this movie up.
Oh, yeah. The Vietnam is a big base of this movie because also it's the time period too. That's yeah. what I mean, it's what was going on.
And you know, it was the late 60s, early 70s, and Forrest was a young man, so mm-hmm. obviously he would have got drafted and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But he overcame a lot of obstacles and led a rich and meaningful life if you believe his tales. Which I do, but I don't. They're embellished. I'm sorry. You know, he has an IQ of 75 and is at least a savant.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then we'll get to this here in a minute. Lieutenant Dan overcomes his lack of legs and becomes an able sea captain.
Mm-hmm.
And gets over the prejudice of Vietnamese people by becoming engaged to a Vietnamese woman. Now,
that has happened. I've actually seen cases of that. Yeah. You know, people. Yeah. Instances of that, yeah.
He's not prejudiced to Vietnamese people. He's married to one.
Right?
I mean, even Jenny eventually settles down and becomes at peace with her life with Forrest. But she does have unprocessed anguish and is portrayed as the whore of Babylon, undeserving of anything happy in her life. That's what this movie did to her.
I love the fact that you are so team Jenny in this, that you're just like, F the police when it comes to everything else. And I love that you just sort of took this, I'm going to stand up for the female in this story mantle. That makes me...
Well, it's not because Jenny's female, it's because of how shockingly they portrayed her.
I know, but still.
But I get what you're saying. So let's look at a couple of interesting facts real quick. And we'll wrap this up here in a minute. So Forrest gets up to talk at the Vietnam rally in Washington. He has the microphone plug pulled and you cannot hear him.
Right.
What he said was, and I quote, "Sometimes when people go to Vietnam, they go home to their mamas without any legs. Sometimes they don't go home at all. And that's a bad thing." And that's all I have to say about that. So, Dan and Bubba are still on his mind.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know. I mentioned that when Forrest first learns to play ping pong in the infirmary, he's told the trick is to keep his eye on the ball. After that moment, whenever he's shown playing ping pong, he never blinks. So.
Hmm.
Yeah. Had the line, "My name is Forrest Gump. People call me Forrest Gump." Was ad-libbed by Tom Hanks while filming the scene, and liked it so much. Zemeckis liked it so much better than what he was scripted.
Right, that he kept it in. Yeah. And then Robin Wright was actually sick with a cold when shooting the nightclub scene. When she, it's just her and the guitar, and she's, you know,
in the strip club.
And, yeah, yeah. Answers blowing in the wind. Yeah. In spite of this, she was still able to perform her own singing during a nonstop 24-hour shoot in which she was nearly nude except for her guitar covering her.
Now, from our experience of having a film student child and being in film students, all the lights and everything would have made her nice and warm and toasty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So she would
be all right.
Yeah.
Scene where Forrest spots Jenny at the peace rally at the Lincoln Memorial and reflecting pool in Washington, D.C. required visual effects to create a large crowd. Over 2 days of filming, approximately 1,500 extras were used, and at each successive take, the extras were rearranged and moved into a different quadrant away from the camera. And with the help of the computer, visual effects again, the extras multiplied to create a crowd of several hundred thousand. Old trick, though. They use that in commercials.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the last time somebody lied about how many people were there at the...
Right here, right now, episode 2, me and Greg spoke about that. Go listen to it.
It was originally scripted and shot that young Jenny kills her father by releasing the tractor handbrake, so it runs him down in the cornfield. This element was removed as the filmmakers decided audience wouldn't forgive Jenny for such a violent act, no matter how evil her father was. The deleted scene can be seen on the 25th anniversary Blu-ray.
That is such a dog crap answer and a cop out.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've said the kind of abuse that Jenny's going through, and Jenny kills her abuser, she's gonna get her sympathy back.
Oh yeah.
So that's why they left it out, because they didn't want her to have any sympathy until the last bit of the movie.
I love the fact of just how dogmatic he is about this. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with him on all of it, but the fact that he has taken this mantle, this girl power mantle, and run with it, like, it warms my heart. So, not that I don't think that Jenny does deserve all the compassion, that's what I'm saying. I'm just thinking, to me, it's not as bad as it is to him, but I could be seeing it differently. I don't know. But God bless him. My little cinnamon roll. Haley Joel Osment was cast in the film after the casting director had noticed him in a Pizza Hut commercial. And like we said earlier, after his experience playing Lieutenant Dan, Gary Sinise established a charity to help disabled veterans. To date, he's raised over $280 million.
With an M. That's a lot of money. It's a lot of change, man.
Yeah, he's made almost a third of the profit from Forrest Gump.
In charitable donations,
which pretty is cool.
Lieutenant Dan tells Forrest the day that Forrest works on a shrimp boat is the day he'd be an astronaut. This is a reference to the book where Forrest became an astronaut. And wouldn't you know, the next year, Sinise and Hanks appeared together in Apollo 13.
Yeah, so Sinise and Hanks did a few movies together. They were like a drama version of Adam Sandler and Ron... Whatchamadoodle. Ron Schneider.
Rob Schneider,
excuse me. So they were like a drama... Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider. Tell me I'm wrong.
You could have gone with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor, but no. You went with Schneider and Sandler. God bless you, woman.
Okay.
So your rating of this movie, seriously?
I'm going to say... We're gonna very wild. Yeah. I'm going to say 7 out of 10. Is it problematic because of a lot of the way that it was filmed at the time and whatnot? Yes. Do I think that they treated it the best they could considering prevailing attitudes at the time? Also, yes. But I understand where some of the people feel differently. Well, so...
I'm going to say 3 out of 10, and here's why, okay? First, let's look at the quotable iconic lines. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Every box of chocolates has a picture card in there of what the chocolate is and the name of the chocolate and what it's got in there. So you know what you're going to get.
You're going to be pedantic AF.
Stupid is as stupid does.
Yes.
What does that even mean?
It's me in the South. It's a Southern thing.
It's a Southern thing.
Yes.
I've beaten the Jenny horse to death with this one with a stick. But I mean, she is made out to be a horrible person, and her life is considered a waste.
Here's the thing: did she make mistakes? Absolutely. But I think to glamour all that up, you get. This is a woman who did the best she could at the time, and I think it takes away her agency.
Well, yeah, it's just, I guess my thing is not the fact that it's not glamorized, it's the fact that it's not sympathized.
Well, it is.
At the end, when you find out that she's dying.
Well, no. I mean, Forrest is sympathetic with her the entire
time.
Nobody
else is.
Well, no, but nobody else would have been to any woman at the time, which sucks.
I understand that, but that's where I'm... That's...
Right, no, and I get that. But if you're going to do it to true to attitudes at the time, it has to be portrayed that way, and it's portrayed through his lens.
Fair enough. So, but, I mean, she is seen as the bane of the movie's existence. She is the proverbial bad guy in this movie.
Okay.
And I always thought Forrest's obsession with it did come across as a little creepy. But you've explained to me why.
Oh, yeah, that she's, you know, she's
a constant.
Yeah, she's his lobster.
And look, the acting, top notch.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
everybody did their job. Mwah, je ne sais quoi, right?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
But the lightheartedness is almost too light. Too diabetes, saccharin inducing, you know, just. It's just too corny where it needs to be. It's too dark where it shouldn't be. You know, it's also Forrest doesn't ask any questions. Now look, you've said it yourself. We have family that are on the spectrum. They still ask questions.
Oh yeah.
They still, even people with low IQs, they still ask questions about what's going on. And in the stories, Forrest seems completely oblivious to everything.
Right.
Everything thrown at him, he's completely oblivious to. Even with an IQ of 75, even with being on the spectrum, surely you'd have asked one or two questions.
Okay.
Maybe three or four.
Okay.
But, you know, and also he's a super savant. Savants are only, from my experience, from my... unqualified, uneducated. They're not savants at multiple things.
Well,
he's a tremendous businessman. He's a world class ping pong player, world class footballer.
I'm gonna interject on those three things though.
Okay.
Okay. Businessman, all he did was work the boat. Lieutenant Dan invested the money.
Fair.
So he didn't pick where the money went.
No.
And then once his money started making money, he just backed up and let other folks handle that. He don't deal with all that. So, and it even shows him at some point, like, Lieutenant Dan, like, mailing him a check or whatever. Like, you just do things. So, I mean, yeah. Football. He did not play football. He ran. That's the thing. He didn't know the game. The coach said, you run. It's all you need to do. Is you take this ball and you run, because that's all he knew to do was run.
Yeah.
Just like when he ran, the running was his thing. It was his escape. It started as an actual escape.
Yes.
And then it just became...
Literal escape.
Right, right. And then, I mean, also think it's a trauma response. I mean, he
single
started running...
Single mom in Alabama in the 50s.
Well, no. He had to run from his tormentors as a child.
Yeah.
And then whenever things got bad, when he ran.
Yeah.
So he ran in the war. He jumped up and ran and grabbed people and just ran. Just ran. That's how he got Lieutenant Dan out. He ran when Jenny left. He just ran. So that tricks. And but the ping pong thing, that is an actual, like, that is perfect for somebody on the spectrum. Because you hyper focus. This is your thing. Your thing is to watch this ball and hit it when it comes to you. That is your job. So with that being, like, the things that you listed as to why, I actually think that could work.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
And I promise, I'm not trying to be super argumentative with you this episode.
No,
I feel like I'm like, erg.
No, this is fun. This is fun. Let's talk about the legacy of the movie real quick. We wrap up here. This film was reevaluated. Okay. Film critical and commercially top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
Top tier.
Mm-hmm.
However, modern reviews have been highly critical of this film.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The portrayal of the Vietnam War.
Right.
Not understanding the racism, the sexism, the isms that he witnesses people go through, he's oblivious to.
Mm. Okay.
The political activism and the hippie movement were considered cartoony and over the top.
Okay.
A lot of things were beyond Forrest's comprehension, but he was doing them anyway.
Okay.
The dismissiveness of the LGBT community in the AIDS epidemic and not even acknowledging it. Now,
time-wise,
it would have been around about the start of it. But not even acknowledging, you know, that gay people exist in the 80s. I mean...
Yeah, but the 80s was only 5 minutes of the entire film.
True.
You don't know it's the 80s when they're sitting on the bench. You don't know what time it is or what year it is until at the very end, you know. So it's 81 when he meets his son, and then you've got 10 minutes of let's wrap this all up and put a bow on everything. So where are you gonna...
True, but I mean, it's because... Okay, because of the fact that even though now we know it's Hep C that Jenny died of.
Right.
A lot of people assumed that it was either HIV or AIDS.
Right.
And to not even acknowledge this epidemic that was beginning.
I'm not saying you're not right.
No, I know. I'm just going through what they reevaluate, what critics reevaluated the movie on. Right.
And I also want to say that when I'm speaking all of these things, I'm not saying this from an apologist point of view. That's not.
No, I know that.
I know. You know that, but let me explain this for just a second. I'm not, for anybody who's listening, I'm not trying to explain away these things. And I'm not saying that they were right or that John is wrong on anything. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that from my understanding of the 60s and the 70s and having lived in the 80s and 90s when the book was written and the movie came out, like, we didn't have the pop culture vernacular or the, you know, to the lexicon wasn't as big and you know, diverse as it is now. There were things that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so do I think that this movie was perfectly done? Of course not. Has it dated itself? Absolutely. But I think that it did a good job at the time with the understandings that we have of things, with the understanding we had of things at the time. Okay. That's my whole thing.
Now,
modern lens, absolutely did it, but you can't look at it with the modern lens. You have to look at it like where we were. Well,
yes and no. I mean, okay. You for a movie as critical and as a cornerstone of Americana, you have to look through a modern lens too. And I'll give you an example of a movie that we covered here on the podcast that we looked through a modern lens.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fantastic movie for the first two acts, and then the third act it fell apart because of nothing but trans jokes.
Clerks 2?
Ace Ventura.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They didn't know any better then, but you can still be critical of...
Yeah, no. I'm not saying not to be critical, but I don't think it deserves as much.
Let's get off my lawn.
Sort of, yeah. But, I mean, I get it. And again, I'm not saying that anybody who is offended by it should not be offended by it. They absolutely should. Feel however you feel. You were perfectly entitled, and I support you feeling that way. I'm just saying, in my little point of view, as wrong as I probably am, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can see how it was made the way that it was made.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, this is the thing, though. The Academy, people in the Academy have said that if they revoted for the award for Best Picture today, they would have given it to Shawshank.
Totally.
And to be honest, they should have given it to Shawshank anyway. Shawshank is a vastly superior movie.
Yes.
But they gave it to this.
Yes.
So, I mean, look, it's not all bad. It's not all doom and gloom. This, you have said yourself, this has entered pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I know people who have nicknamed Forrest or Gump because of their intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
I know... You know, the amount of times that I've heard an American comic or an American in particular say something stupid and then they say something along the lines of, I might as well have just said, Lieutenant Dan, you ain't got no legs, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, this has entered the pop culture sphere.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, lines from, you know, you said quote stuff all the time, stupid is stupid mm-hmm. does, life's like a box of chocolates. That was voted one of the greatest lines in movie history, which doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like Royale with cheese, I understand because they're doing a comparison thing. But you know what's inside a box of chocolates?
Some of them. Sometimes brands are chintzy and they're wrong. So sometimes your sheet doesn't match.
But you still have a sheet.
It don't do no good if it's wrong.
Yes, but if it's wrong, you still have a guess of what it could be.
No, you don't. If it's wrong, it's wrong.
There was gonna be a sequel. To Forrest Gump 2, which was going to take place in the mid-90s,
uh-huh.
using elements of the book that they didn't use, like Forrest going into space.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually supposed to be accidentally the first guy in space with the monkey.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Just that kind of stuff. And then one of the biggest tragedies in American history hit, 9/11, and they said that the world doesn't need another Forrest Gump movie after 9/11.
Mm-mm. No.
So, and you know what? They did make their money off of franchising because, as the time of recording, there are at least 30 locations in the U.S. of the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company.
At one point in time, there was many more than that.
There's only 30 left now.
Yeah. But from what I understand, I've never eaten one, but from what I understand, it's really good.
Pricey too, though.
Oh, yeah. That's why I've never eaten there. Mm-mm.
And that is our review, mm-hmm. our argument of Forrest Gump. What do you think about Forrest Gump? Am I completely in the wrong about how I feel about Jenny?
No.
If I am, let us know in our social media pages. Is Sarah completely in the right?
No.
Let us know on our social media pages. Tell us, what is your genuine opinion of Forrest Gump? Because like I said, I think it's a movie of its time, and you take it out of its time, and that's where the cracks appear in the facade.
Okay. So. I'm down with that. Also want to suggest in the future a possible episode.
Okay.
Where we... Have we done a soundtrack albums?
Funnily enough, uh-oh. We didn't mention the soundtrack. Let's look at the soundtrack real quick. Hang on. Okay, the Forrest Gump soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
Featured Hound Dog.
Oh, yeah, it featured everything.
It's 16 plus 18, so 17, 17, 34 tracks.
Uh-huh. It was a good CD.
It's a good CD.
Oh, double disc. Back in the day.
But all of the songs are from the 50s through the 50s through 80.
Yeah.
Not 80s, 80.
Yeah.
So you've got things like California Dreamin',
mm-hmm.
Respect, Can't Help Myself, Blowing in the Wind.
But it was a compilation album released in the 90s. So I think we need to have, just because things like this exist, period pieces exist that were released in the 90s. I think we should have a soundtrack episode.
Well,
do you agree? Let us know in the comments.
Yes. And with that in mind, we'll be right back. Stay tuned because we're going to announce our next episode here in a minute. Sarah, it's good to have you on. Yes. Are you going to hang out with us?
Sure.
All right. Be right back. So, Sarah's still with me. Sarah, hi.
Hello.
Okay, you mentioned just a moment ago that mm-hmm. we should do an episode where we talk about movie soundtracks.
Yes.
Okay. I don't think we're going to be doing it this season.
Okay.
And we might do it next season. I don't know yet. I haven't decided on what's going to happen. But
yes.
Next week, you're yes. going to be joining me as we look at movie theme songs from the 90s.
Ooh.
And we're going to rank them. I've got 38 songs.
This makes me happy.
I got 38 songs that were the theme music of films. Now, some of them have some of the films have two soundtracks that we're going to mm-hmm. use, and we're going to rank them, every single one. We've got 38. We're ranging from Cher to Madonna to Madonna to U2 to U2. Just Madonna did a lot of soundtrack work in the 90s.
Right.
All they saw her songs and went, that'd be a good one.
Right.
So that's going to be next week. So Sarah's going to be joining me for that one, and I'm really, really excited for it.
Woohoo!
That means you're going to have to sit closer to me, but that's okay.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Yes.
We'll figure it out. So, Forrest Gump's in the books.
Yes.
That's going to be next week. Do you have anything else that you have in your mind?
No, I think I'm good.
Good deal. Because I'm getting tired.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, and like I said, look, that wasn't, for those wondering, that wasn't an argument. That was a disagreement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that was not an argument.
We can have an argument.
And on that note.
All right. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. If you want to go ahead and check out more stuff that we do, go check out becausewenetwork.com. That's where you find all our archive of every episode that we've ever done, of every single show that we've ever done. What do you mean every show? Well, we've got four of them that we kind of do on a regular basis. We got the 90s podcast, we got the 90s gamer, we got a dad streamer, and we've got the Right Here Right Now podcast. Go check out our YouTube channel. That's where you'll find all of our episodes of every single show that we've ever done. But if you want to find where they are, go to the website first, okay? I know that doesn't make sense, but trust me, I know what I'm talking about. Go check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and formerly Twitter. Go check out Because Maybe Network on there. Also, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music. That's where you find this very, very podcast. If this is not where you usually listen to podcasts, if you listen to this on Spotify and your go-to is Google Podcasts, we're on both. So that's good.
Yes.
With that in mind, Sarah, it's good to have you on. Thank you for taking part.
Thank you.
We will see you. You will see us next week as we talk about some of the greatest movie soundtracks in 90s history.
Fabulous.
So, say your prayers, eat your vitamins.
Mm-hmm. All that good stuff.
All that good stuff. Say hi to your parents if you're still in touch with them. If you're not still in touch with them, say hi to the closest relative that you're in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
Pet your dog, pet your cat, hug your kids. And if you have none of those, water your plant. It needs watering. So I don't know what I'm saying. I never have a good way of ending these things. So I'm just going to tell everybody, take it easy, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.